flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest, over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Folks, this week is National School Choice Week, and joining us to talk to talk about this is Daniel Erspammer, CEO of the Pelican Institute. Daniel, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Nules. Great to be back with you.
Daniel, happy New Year to you. First time that we've had a chance to talk this new year. I hope you and your family are having a great new year.
Very good. Same to you. We're doing great over here.
So, Daniel, National School Choice Week, obviously this is a time to celebrate the passage of laws across this country in a number of states that provide school choice. Where do we kind of stand nationally, and where do you, and can you talk about successes, failures, or otherwise with the way some of the implementation of this has happened over the years?
You know, absolutely. Louisiana's been in an interesting place relative to the National School Choice Week National School Choice landscape. For years, we were one of the leaders, you know, with certainly the charter and choice district here in Orleans Parish, and an early voucher program and an early tax credit scholarship program, all of which helped a lot of kids access a quality education that best met their needs. The truth is, in the last few years, we've fallen a little bit behind of Florida and Arizona, West Virginia, other states who have adopted universal education freedom in the form of education savings accounts. Of course, last year, the legislature passed the L.A. Gator program. Now they'll have to come back in this legislative session, make sure it's funded and implemented and ready for kids to take advantage of it.
Daniel, when we look across the country, let me ask the question this way. When we look here in the city of New Orleans, you know, the creation of charter schools, we became almost a 100% charter school district.
That's right.
How would you rate it on a scale from 1 to 10? I mean, many of these have been incredibly troubled. Many are closed. Many are still in the process of reconstituting, re-engineering themselves. Your assessment of the success or failure of this, of what we've had here in New Orleans. And that's not a knock on school choice. I mean,
Sure.
I think it just reveals challenges, right?
No question about it. There's challenges in the education system overall. In Orleans Parish, long been one of the worst performing school districts in the state, in the country even, of course, also plagued by factors outside of the education policy space, deep levels of poverty and inequality. So what we've seen in the charter movement is that scores, outcomes, student performance outcomes have increased. Now, have they increased as much as any of us would want to? Absolutely not. But they've made substantial increases. And in the report card that just came out, the NAEP report card yesterday, Orleans Parish was one of the top 10 districts in the state that's made some of the most significant post-COVID advances. And I want to point out, you mentioned some charters have closed. And that's the system working exactly the way it's supposed to. This is the beauty of education freedom or school choice, whether it's private school choice or public school choice like charters, is when they don't perform the way they're supposed to, they lose their charter and someone else gets another shot at it. In a traditional system, the way we've done it for 100 years, if you're failing, we just give you more money and hope that that fixes the problem. But what we know is if we can empower families to make those choices as best fit their needs and hold those accountable, and parents moving from one school to the next is one very powerful way we hold those schools accountable.
Yeah, I mean, it's just kind of interesting, though. I mean, I kind of tend to look at things locally at a granular level, and what I see is that charter school board policy measures, lack of implementation, lack of professionalism, you know, it just a lack of board education as to what is actually how a board operates, the functions of a board and everything else. And you go back and you look at some of these places that failed, not from a teaching perspective or
right.
a student accomplishment perspective, but from a governance perspective, it seems to me most of these places have failed because the governance has been horrible. They had great teachers, you know, and they had students that were performing, but we've just disrupted, you know, the lives of so many kids because we got folks that are sitting on these boards that some are well-intentioned, some not so much.
Yeah.
Some take advantage of it, of that position financially and otherwise, and we hear the horror stories all the time.
Yeah, you know, it's a fair critique, and I think you know, I point out a couple of things. The first is the same thing happens in any system, whether we're talking about traditional public schools
exactly.
or corporate America. so there's
well,
no perfect
answer. Your point is well taken because it did happen with the public school system in the city
right.
of New Orleans, where they didn't even know how much money they had or
that's
didn't
right.
have, right? I mean, and it's like, hello, excuse me? What are we doing?
Yeah, it blows your mind. And, you know, it's a good reminder, too, to your listeners, if you're out there and competent and can, you know, have an interest in this, volunteer to be a charter board member. They're always looking for highly competent people. There are training programs through the Louisiana Association of Public Charter Schools. So, yes, there is a need for more good, focused board members. So if anybody's listening out there and is interested, get in touch. You know, there's lots of opportunities to serve.
Ah, can't you see it? A sparkling roadside EV quick charge power facility. It's chargers, control panels, and switchgear powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean. We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of Season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
No, absolutely. And, you know, I was, I guess, equally impressed like you are with the increase in the scores. It's always good to see that positive movement. And I think we've seen that for several years in a row now, right?
Yeah, that's right. You know, I think we've seen policy change that has put focus back on the basics. We're actually back to teaching phonics as the core way to address the literacy crisis. We're back to fundamental numeracy. You know, we've sort of lost our way for, and this isn't just in Louisiana, across the country, on the curriculum front, but we're now seeing the results of those changes. We've empowered parents to make decisions. You know, it's amazing. Kids perform better when they're in a school that fits them best. And so all of these things together, we're now 32nd in the country, which is not something to celebrate in and of itself, but it's a heck of a lot better than 50, and it suggests we're on an upward trajectory. We can get in the top 10, and with the changes that are being made now and the hard work of teachers and parents and students, we're on the right path.
Absolutely, and I know people – I'm impatient by nature, and maybe you are too, Daniel.
Yeah.
You know, but this is something that we're going to reap the benefit, really. We'll see some incremental benefit here in the short term, but it's really in the mid-long term that we see that we reap the benefits of what's happening, right?
Oh, no question about it. And you know, you put all of these things together, whether it's improvement in education or investment in the state's technical and community college system or changes in the tax code and removing barriers to work. All of these things work together. And we've been talking about this for years, you and I and everybody else. It takes fundamental transformational change. We're just starting to see the first glimpses of what can happen. We have announcements of big data centers and new jobs, and things seem to really be on the upswing for Louisiana. We got to keep on that path. If we can get the education system right, if we can get the tort system right and insurance, and if we can keep that tax structure going more simple and lower, we're going to just see huge benefits across the board.
Daniel, let's focus on the Louisiana Gator Scholarship Program. There's still a lot of uncertainties with, I guess, the implementation and the financing the same. Some of that, I think, is going to be, correct me if I'm wrong, decided in this legislative session upcoming?
That's right. So the structure and the rules of the program have been implemented by BESSE, the State Board of Education. The legislature will make some big decisions about what resources to put behind this, how it is subject to appropriation by the legislature every year. But soon, and the Department of Education has just put out its guidance on this. You can find out more on our website, which is aschoolthatfits.com. And all the details and the link to the Department of Ed's information are on there. They will start accepting applications here in a couple of months. And kids, families that are eligible, these are incoming kindergartners of all stripes. We've got folks who are currently enrolled in a public school who may believe that there's a different or better option for them. And any family, whether you're currently enrolled in a public, private, homeschool, whatever, who is below 250% of poverty and their annual income will be available, and those families will get priority.
You pretty much you have your finger on the pulse of what's happening up there. What are you hearing? What do you think is going to happen?
Well, you know, we've got several things coming at each other at the same time. We've got decreasing enrollment in the traditional public schools. It's been a trend for the last 4 or 5, 6 years, even while spending on that education system has increased dramatically. We've got a broader thing, and Pelican Institute has certainly been calling for more budget restraint and focus on priorities. But I think there's a strong commitment from the governor and from legislative leaders to ensure that this Gator program has the funding it needs to succeed. I do think we will likely see demand of families perhaps outpace funding in the first couple of years as we all figure out what the options are and what families are going to want here. But I think there's a commitment from leadership in Baton Rouge to make sure this program succeeds. And success means families have the options they need that lead to the best outcomes.
Is there a minimum target number that they're talking about? I mean, you know, I know a number of members of the legislature like to kind of keep things simple, right?
And yes.
And in their messaging, is there a target number?
The target number that we've talked about and others is $100 million. So again, we're spending.
And that would equate to how many students?
That would equate to, let's see, do that math quickly. I think that equates to about 10,000 to 15,000 kids.
That's a big number.
And so
that's a big number.
It is a big number. And we're going to have lots of opportunity to see how they perform, to see what demand is. Our sense is there will be, you know, especially in urban areas, though we saw some significant growth in these kinds of programs in rural areas and other states. So we're very interested to see who applies. We'll start to have some of those numbers in the next couple of months.
For the other schools, the parochial privates, if they want to participate, do they have to go through a process? And I know there's always been this hesitancy of, you know, whether they're going to have to give up any of their rights, of their decision making, and things of that nature. So where does that stand?
That's right. So they providers, whether you're a private, parochial, faith based, or other provider. Will have to be approved by the Board of Education, by BESE. And there are some basic requirements laid out in the law and the regulations. But what's really valuable and good about the Gator program is it has put some baseline accountability and requirements, but it recognizes that the reason why some families may choose one school over another is because it's different. So if we make the rules of parental choice that everybody has to follow the exact same rules as the current system, then we're not really giving any choice. So this has been designed to provide accountability and transparency without disrupting the autonomy and the creativity of the existing private school infrastructure to deliver the product that they do best.
A lot of those schools, though, have been reluctant to provide empirical data about testing and things of that nature. Will they be required to do so?
That's right. And it's a good point. In previous iterations, the existing scholarship voucher program, for example, required schools to participate in the state testing. And what happens again, you know, the cadence of curriculum for a school may be different than the traditional public schools. And so the Gator program is designed, you must deliver a nationally norm reference test. So we're still comparing apples to apples for the most part, but you are not required. You can take the LEAP, the state test. That is an option to any school who wants to participate. But so long as they're reporting nationally norm reference test at the end of each year in the core subject areas, that's the requirement so that we can look at what the student outcomes are.
And the teacher standards would be the same, or because I know that some of these schools, I don't know the proper nomenclature, but I guess they have to all be certified teachers. Some I know don't have as many as others and have teacher assistants and things of that nature. Is there any consistency or are there any regulations as it relates to that issue?
So those rules won't change from where they are now. And you know, the thing that to remember, and most folks, you know, may not have been involved in this process, but for the most part, the vast majority of private schools today are still already state approved. There's a process to go through. It's a state approval for a private school. So there are certain standards almost all of these schools are already meeting. And so that remains in place. But again, we want to make sure there's baseline accountability, transparency, and excellence with as much flexibility as possible to deliver customized education.
And I got a text here. What about teacher pay?
Yeah, this does not address teacher pay. I will say just a couple of things on that. One, part of the, and I'm sure we'll be talking more about this, constitutional amendment that'll be in front of voters in March has a component that the state will pay off local school boards' pension debt as a trade-off for school boards who make those decisions about pay, giving a raise to the traditional public school and charter school teachers. So that has... that is part of the package that will be presented to voters on March 29th in the special election. And, you know, there's what we've seen in other states is when there is choice, of course, institutions of education are not just competing for students, they're competing for teachers, too. So there's some early data that suggests this has an upward impact on teacher pay across the board as well. We still have a lot more data to collect on that. A lot of these programs are new, but there's some early indications that we're seeing this is moving up teacher pay, which makes all the sense in the world. Competition does great things. All boats rise, everybody wins.
And I think y'all were following this data at one time. Correct me if I'm wrong. Where do we stand with the graduating teachers, you know, from our universities? Do we have enough in the pipeline or not?
No, we really don't. Certainly that's something to be addressed. The other thing we would say is, and I, you know, think back to maybe, you know, your time in school, my time in school, your listeners, some of my favorite teachers came at teaching from a non-traditional pathway. I certainly had great teachers as well who came through the teaching schools. My in-laws both are public school, now retired public school teachers. So not suggesting that's bad, but some of the teachers that really inspired me were in industry and then came retired or took a career change and came into the classroom. So I think not only do we need to be focused on making sure our schools of education are recruiting and providing a pathway to bring more teachers into the classroom, but we need to look at every option on the table to bring inspiring, talented people into the classroom to get these kids ready for life.
I taught at the university level, adjunct, obviously, for a number of years. It was very rewarding. I loved it. Wish I had the time to do it today, quite frankly. I enjoyed it. And I think a lot, as you point out, I think a lot of folks looking for that second career would love to teach.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. It's such a rewarding thing to do. It's hard, you know, there's just nothing better than inspiring a young person and seeing that light turn on and seeing them grow and learn. And, you know, certainly as a dad, I see it in my kids, but the chances I've had to serve just briefly in the classroom from time to time, it really is a rewarding experience.
Final thoughts, Daniel?
Final thoughts, you know, I'll just share a quick story that came out this morning. The monuments, some big landmarks around the state have been lit up for National School Choice Week in red and yellow, and that includes the Caesars Superdome. And the story this morning of an Eagles fan happened to drive by and thought that that red and yellow was the NFL predetermining the Chiefs as the victor. So we have School Choice Week and the Super Bowl combining with each other. It was a lot of fun.
You cannot win in today's world. Ever. Oh, my God.
So we'll keep on it, keep spreading the message, and everybody enjoy both National School Choice Week and it's Catholic Schools Week this week as well.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Truly enjoy the conversation with you always. Daniel Espammer, CEO of the Pelican Institute. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Neil. You too.
We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Give us a shout. We have some time to take calls when we come back. This is Newell on WWL.